A working woman, Bonai told him, smiling brightly in the starlit night. I have responsibilities that keep me at my desk most of the day.
Doug forced a grin. Here I thought you had nothing to do but swim in the lagoon and go fishing.
Bonai was wearing a wraparound pareo. Doug was in his usual sky-blue coveralls. The night was magnificent. A warm salt breeze blew across the beach, and thousands of stars sparkled in the great dome of the heavens. Doug searched the sky for the moon but could not find it. Of course, he realized, we're in the nighttime part of our cycle. From Earth it's a new moon, invisible.
Have you thought about my offer? Bonai asked almost shyly.
For a moment Doug felt puzzled.
Offer?
Asylum here in Kiribati, she said. For you and as many of your people as you want to bring with you.
Doug took a deep breath.
It was one place where the VR simulation failed. Instead of soft tropical sea air, he tasted the flat, canned, slightly metallic mixture of moonbase.
I need to know more about what the peacekeepers are planning, he said.
I've told you as much as Rashid told me, Bonai said. Several hundred troops, equipped with missiles, are being assembled at the Yamagata base in Copernicus. They plan to attack Moonbase within a month.
Do you know anything about how they plan to attack?
She shook her head. Doug hesitated, then asked,
Tamara, can you find out anything more?
In the starlit shadows he could not make out the expression on her face. But her voice sounded strained as she replied,
Doug, I don't want to see Rashid again. Once is a fling. Twice... he'll either get suspicious or begin to think he owns me.
Oh, he said, suddenly embarrassed.
I see.
I understand.
Do you?
I tried to talk with the director of Nippon One, he said, almost mumbling the words. He won't take my calls.
Tamara touched his sleeve with her virtual hand. Doug, I know it's terribly difficult for you, but you've got to face the fact that Moonbase is lost. You've got to start thinking about your own safety.
He nodded, feeling miserable. I know you're right. And yet, he stopped. Out in the shadows beneath the palm trees that fringed the beach, he saw something move.
Killifer was delighted. About time I caught a break, he said to himself. He had bought an inflatable boat, barely big enough for himself and the box of food and drink he had brought with him, and chugged out into the lagoon at sunset. The beach boys who watched the hotel's rental outriggers paid him scant attention, a tourist going out for a little night fishing. As soon as it got fully dark, Killifer set out for the private little islet on the far end of the atoll where Tamara Bonai sometimes went, alone. It wasn't easy, out on the lagoon all by himself in the dark. The lights from the hotel and casino soon sank below the watery horizon. His eyes grew accustomed to the starlight, but each of the flat, palm-fringed islets looked pretty much alike to him. Bonai's private little isle was the last one in the chain, he knew. Still, he almost missed the islet and drifted out to the reef in a sudden swirl of current between islands. Finally, he got to her islet, the farthest one from Betio and Bonriki. Sooner or later she'll come here, he told himself as he beached the inflatable boat. Once he had pulled the boat safely out of sight into the bushes beneath the palms, he took a quick swig of beer from the cooler and settled down to wait for her. Could be days, he knew. What the hell? And there she was. Killifer could hardly believe his eyes. The woman steered her outrigger up onto the beach, just as pretty as you please, and stepped out for a walk under the stars, alone. Grinning to himself, Killifer thought that maybe General O'Connor's God was looking out for him after all.
Somebody's out there, Doug said, pointing toward the palm trees and low shrubbery beneath them.
Bonai followed his gaze.
There couldn't be. Not at this time of night. The canoe rental closes at sundown.
He's coming toward us, Doug said.
Yes, I see him.
Doug started to wave the man off, then realized that he was on the moon and the approaching man couldn't see him.
Damn, we'll have to put up no trespassing signs, Bonai said, staring at the man striding toward her.
Or guards, Doug muttered.
She looked up at Doug. I wanted us to be alone.
Me too. Why don't you tell him he's not allowed here?
With a sigh, she said,
I suppose I'll have to. Starting up the beach toward the intruder, Bonai called out to him.
I'm sorry, sir, but you're not allowed onto these islets. You'll have to go back to Bonriki.
She pointed toward the faint glow on the horizon from the high-rise hotels. The man showed no sign of understanding. Bonai repeated her warning in German, then Japanese. He doesn't look Japanese, Doug said, squinting through the shadows at him.
You're not allowed here,
Tamara said louder in English. The man came closer and smiled maliciously at her. With a sudden cold hand clutching his heart, Doug recognized Jack Killifer.
Tamara, stay away from him, he said, grabbing for her arm.
Why?
I know him, Doug said. He almost killed me once.
Bonai's eyes went wide. She turned from Doug to Killifer, close enough now almost to reach her, and back to Doug again.
Keep away from him, Doug urged. Call for help.
Bonai raised her arm to speak into her wrist phone, but before she could, Killifer lunged at her. She looked weird to Jack Killifer, covered from neck to feet in some kind of scuba suit. Then he realized that she was wearing a virtual reality full-body sensor suit. She's out here on this empty little island making out with somebody in VR, Killifer said to himself. Hot little tramp. He grinned at her. No helmet, though. Probably got contact lenses instead. He grasped her by the wrist and pulled her toward him.
Don't give me any trouble, doll, he said.
Doug reached for Killifer, but it was useless. The man was real and solid. Doug was nothing more than an electronic ghost. He started shouting for the technicians to call the police in Kiribati. Tamara clawed at Killifer's face with her free hand, but he blocked it, then knocked her to the sand with a backhand slap across her face. Doug howled and leaped at Killifer, but went right through him onto the sand.
Doug!
Tamara screamed as Killifer dropped to his knees beside her.
Doug? He growled. Is that who you're screwing with? Little Dougie on the moon? Getting laid in VR?
Killifer laughed and started ripping the sensor suit off Bonai. She struggled and kicked, but he cuffed her hard enough to draw blood from her mouth and peeled the rubbery suit down off her shoulders.
Nothing underneath, he said, grinning down at her. Makes it easy.
Doug was screaming for somebody to alert the Kiribati police, but he knew there was no time to help Tamara. He pounded his fists in helpless fury on the virtual sand as Killifer stripped the suit off her struggling body. He punched her once in the midsection hard enough to double her up. Her struggle stopped.
You killed her, you son of a bitch! Doug raged.
Killifer did not hear him. But Tamara wasn't dead. Not yet. Doug watched helplessly as Killifer spread her naked legs apart and raped her, his hands squeezing her windpipe as his body covered hers. Killifer watched the light in her eyes fade. He fucked her good, pumping years of hate and fury into her as he slowly, slowly cut off her air. Then he stopped and pulled away from her limp body.
Come on, kid, you're not finished yet, he said. And neither am I.
He grinned as her eyelids fluttered and she coughed. Doug was raving like a lunatic when the electronics technicians burst into the VR chamber. It took four of them to get him down on the floor and peel the sensor suit off him. The last thing they took off were the contact lenses, so Doug was able to see Killifer sitting on Tamara's chest, pinning her arms to the sand, slapping her to full consciousness as he came erect once again.
She's dead, Ginny Anson told Doug. The Kiribati police found her on the island. She was pretty badly beaten up, neck broken.
Despite the tranquilizer the medics had given him, Doug was quivering like a knife thrown into a wall.
I couldn't do a thing to stop him, he chattered. I couldn't do anything.
Edith was sitting on the edge of his bunk. Anson and one of the medics crowded next to them. Bam Gordet stood by the partition, watching silently with brooding eyes.
It's not your fault, Edith said gently. There's nothing you could have done.
I should have killed him years ago, when he murdered Foster Brennard. When he tried to kill me. I should have killed him then, executed him. Then this wouldn't have happened. Then Tamara would still be alive.
It's not your fault, Edith repeated.
It's all my fault, Doug snapped. All of this mess is my doing. If I just let Foray...
His voice sank to an exhausted